because I wanted to get on the show, your retirement show, and just tell you how much I love you. And I was fired up for your retirement. And yeah, but I'm driving. I'm not going to be able to make it.
Well, that means a lot, brother. Love you too, man. Thank you.
Everyone, I'm Rob Espero of the Viral Volley Podcast, and with me is a very honored guest. And, you know, it's bittersweet why I'm speaking to assistant coach, or now retired assistant coach, Mark Prescia of UC Irvine and University of Hawaii All-American, USA Men's National Team back in the day, and the Bud Light Pro Volleyball Fours Tour. Hey, Mark, thanks for joining me it's an ad hoc episode because the news broke out on Friday to the general public, even though I received an email on Thursday night. So a lot of people are wondering, oh my gosh, one of the good ones is stepping away from the game. And I have to wholeheartedly agree, one of the good ones in the game. So thanks for taking the time this afternoon. Do I still got you?
Respected you and what you do for the game. And I mean, obviously you're the best in the business when it comes to announcing, but no, it's my pleasure to be on your show. And yeah, I mean, it's certainly bittersweet leaving, because it's something that I've loved for a long time. I was fortunate enough to get to play in the league and then coach at Pepperdine for a while on a full-time basis. And then once I got into business, I didn't know that I would ever get to do it. And when John Spira and Johnny Hawks, that were coaching at the time at Irvine, asked me to do it, I came on, you know, in a voluntary role to begin with. And then the other assistant, Matty Boyce, who I had coached at Pepperdine, he left. And so they asked me to come on in a part-time role. And I said, I can't do that, John, you know, speaking with Spoo. And he said, listen, just show up for practice and matches. And, you know, you won't have to worry about being in the office a bunch. Because I was working, of course, and
right.
I told him I'd do it for a year, and here we are 16 years later, 8 with him and 8 with Niff at the helm. So it's been fun.
Well, I've got to ask some of the questions I had scripted out for you, and then we'll go into that other stuff, because you actually gave me some information I did not know about. I didn't know you had a Pepperdine Hidden Years thing going on there, but I'll press into you on that as we get into the later questions.
Sure.
So I know from our conversations just from the last handful of years that retirement was always a possibility. What made this year the year for you to retire from UCI men's volleyball?
Sure. Yeah, it's kind of an interesting one. I actually tried to retire a couple of years ago. And when I reached out to the gal in HR at UC Irvine, I asked her what I needed to do. And she said, well, I'll send you the information, but you'd be a fool to retire right now. And I said, what is that? And she said, well, if you stay for another year and a half until you're 50 years old, which I turned 50 this past July, then you know, you get all kinds of fun perks and benefits and, you know, pension and all these other things. And so, you know, I didn't feel right about that, but I had a conversation with Niff about it. And he's like, no question, you need to stay. And, yeah, he had never asked me or wanted me to step down, but at the same time, with my time winding down in terms of how much I could give and how much I can put in with the guys and with our training and with office time and things, you know, it was on me that I felt like I needed to step away and give some young, hungry, energetic grinder type young man or woman an opportunity to step in and earn.
You could probably still take in all facets of the game anyways.
Well, yeah, exactly. No doubt about it. But yeah, so I mean, Niff was good enough to say, hey, listen, you know, hang on and get those perks and benefits. And then, you know, if you're ready to go, once you do turn 50, then so be it. But he at the same time, you know, was really cool about giving me the opportunity to stay. But it was time. This was a segue to get out. And unfortunately, my last season ended early and abruptly with COVID. So that's the part that makes it real tough to swallow. But after wondering, you know, all this time during COVID, I still came to the conclusion that it was the right thing for the program. That again, they need someone that's going to grind and be in the office. Typically, when you're a part-time assistant, you're in the office 10 hours a day during the season. And you know, I was I was there maybe 10 hours a week and never in the office, just at our trainings and matches.
Yeah. Well, so I got to ask, that's a good segue to my next question, but did the pandemic have any influence on your decision?
It didn't. I mean, if anything, it would have brought me back. And I certainly, like I said, contemplated that when our season ended. And again, that was going to be my final season. And it's certainly, you know, not about me as an assistant coach, but I felt horrible for the guys that had put in the time that they did, you know, not just in our program, but every other program out there. I mean, you take a look at programs like BYU and Hawaii, who were both, I mean, really, really good. Two of the best teams that each of those respective universities had ever had. And, you know, it ends abruptly for them and for us and for everyone else, of course, in the league. And, or I keep saying the league in volleyball in general. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that made it tougher to retire, shut it down in such an anticlimactic type of ending. But it was still the right time, as I mentioned.
Yeah. Now, with this being a major life decision, did you look to advice from your family, friends, or peers in making this decision?
Sure. Yeah. No, I mean, I've kept in close contact with a lot of people that are around our game. And, you know, and people knew. I mean, I would talk to our guys in the past that, hey, you know, at the end of your 4 years here will probably be the end of my run type of thing. And guys would look back and see that I was still there and heckle me. Hey, I thought you were going to leave when I was leaving type of thing. But I played it after I had been there for the first 8 years with John. I did it on a yearly basis. I just reevaluated each year and kept coming back because of that, because of the guys. I mean, that's the part that's so unusual about our program is that we've had a bunch of amazing kids come through, and there's been, you know, one or two knuckleheads in the history of my 16 years there. And that is it. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, typically you'd have a knucklehead or two on an annualized basis, but that just hasn't been the case. So we're fortunate. Right. Irvine attracts quality kids, obviously. And we just haven't had any of those virus type of kids. And so that's what keeps you coming back.
Yeah. Well, so we're going to go back to those, like I said, I just discovered your hidden Pepperdine years, but back in 2003, how did you come across this volunteer position at UCI and what made the program attractive to you that particular year?
Sure. Well, yeah. So as I mentioned earlier, Spraw and Hoxie reached out, and it was actually 2004 and the season had already started. And I think they were, you know, they had some early season success and then they hit a little bit of a funk. And, you know, John and I had coached against each other when I was coaching at Pepperdine, he was at UCLA. And so we would recruit together and be at all, you know, the club tournaments and things together. And we struck up a friendship. And so he asked me to come and help and just be there whenever I could. So I came to some practices, came to some matches, but it was very sparse. I had just started in a role, a job, and it was, you know, pretty, intense in terms of travel and hours and things, but I at least got a feel again for the college game again, after having coached at Pep on a full-time basis, but I've been out of coaching at least at the college level for a few years, right. But I did that. And I said, Matt Boyce, who was the other assistant, he left at the end of that 04 season. And then that's when I came aboard in this quote unquote part-time role. And that my first season was the 05 season.
Right. Okay. Well, I actually got a famous quotable of you on the bus that I'll share later. I heard you're talking to one of the other athletes on the bus. I'm like, I think you know what it is, but
I'm sure it was Thornton. If you got any information from Thornton, I'm sure it's embellished.
Yeah. Well, so I know after graduating from the University of Hawaii, and one of the guest who I was getting information from said that you make sure that it's known that you're first in all-time kills because the first person stats were deemed ineligible. And you played for the USA men's national team and then the Bud Light Pro Beach Volleyball four-man tour with Team Paul Mitchell. How did you develop this interest in coaching? Was it from your playing days at Hawaii, or did it kind of grow when you were playing on these pro tours and the men's national team?
Sure. Yeah, I think it probably originated when I was playing at Hawaii. We had an assistant coach over there named Tony Crabb, and He was a great coach, and he was tough, and he was very cerebral, and he pushed you, and but he saw things differently. I mean, he saw the game a lot differently, and was pretty innovative in his approach, especially from a blocking perspective, and then offensive systems. And so, you know, he did some unique things. We were smaller at UH. Guys were flying around, really athletic. So it was from him that kind of sparked my interest in coaching. And then the other part of it is just, I've always been around athletics. You know, I started volleyball or playing volleyball late because I was always playing football, basketball, baseball, you know, the standard sports, if you will. But I was always super into sports. And that's all I watch on TV is sports or Sports Center. And it's always my passion. So it was easy to kind of just transition after playing into coaching.
Now, I remember the Edison Charger high school team, and you say they're kind of smaller guys as well. I was like, wait, wasn't Dan Hannon on that team? I know Eddie Rapp was a small guy, but and Hawks was on the same team, I believe. Is that right? Who were some of your teammates?
Yeah, so Dan Hannon and Eddie Rapp were older than me. They were both 2 years older than me. I played with Eddie's little brother, Stever. And Stever was actually, Stever and Eddie were two of the guys that got me to come play. I was playing baseball, and they got me to start or coming to these 6:30 in the morning practices because our school started at 7:30.
Right.
So I showing up and playing at 6:30 in the morning. Dan Glenn was the coach at Edison at the time.
Yep.
And obviously, you know, went on to all kinds of prowess at Newport and all kinds of state championships and CIF championships. But yeah, that's how I started. I started coming to these early morning practices. I was still playing baseball at the time. And then I switched over my junior year to volleyball.
Good. Well, so let's go a little bit later on in the career now, right around 2012-13. Even with the coaching change from John Spraw, who we heard from earlier, after the 2012 NCAA championship, to the current head coach, David Niffen, with whom you ended up being the part of a back-to-back national championship team, why'd you decide to continue on coaching at that point?
Sure. That's a really good question, Rob, because I wasn't going to. I mean, that I felt like, because I knew a year in advance that John was going to get that job at UCLA. The guy that was the head of that hiring committee came and had a conversation with me just to verify some things. I mean, they knew that John was their guy, but regardless, he wanted some background information or just, like I said, some verification on some stuff. And I was pretty convinced that he was going to get that job, because Al had announced that he was going to leave, you know, prior to the 2012 season. So I figured that would be a good time to cut it off myself and shut it down. Again, my business was going really well and my workload was ramping up and things were expanding, et cetera. But once Niff got the job, he came to me and said, listen, you know, I need you and I want you to come back, you know, and he and I had worked together when we were both John's assistants. Mm-hmm. And so he had left for that 2012 season to go coach women's. So he was only gone for 1 year, but I want to say the previous 5 years we had coached together. So we knew each other really well. And when he asked me again, I thought about it and was back and forth. But when I finally came to my senses and said yes, you know, it was one of the better decisions I've ever made. And that team was phenomenal. And you know, Niff did a great job of steering the ship when, you know, we obviously had talent, but the BYU team that we beat in the finals was every bit, if not more talented. And they had smashed us during the regular season. So that was
the Taylor Sander, Ben Patch team, if I recall.
It was. Yeah. And it wasn't just those. I mean, those two were obviously, you know, all world, but there was other players on that team that were good too. So that was a big time win, no doubt about it.
Now, I remember when that last ball dropped at the 2012 National Championship, the camera zoomed in on you and Spraw hugging. And I was like, oh, that's it. I just kind of knew that the Spraw era was ending and there's huge question marks about what was going to happen next. And not just with the, you know, the head coach, but the coaching staff, because I think you'll agree there's a very special relationship with the admin at UC Irvine. There's just a special endearment towards the volleyball staff. I mean, they've got you, they've got great characters on staff. Did you even entertain coming back after that last ball dropped in 2012?
Yeah, well, that's what I was alluding to, is that I had kind of planned or had it, I guess, in my head that I wasn't going to come back. And I just felt like, again, that was a good time to shut it down and just solely focus on my business. But again, if asked me to come back, then I still had that passion, and it was still all about the kids. And since I knew NIF really well, I decided to come back. And then also, as I mentioned, that it was going to be on an annualized basis, that I was going to break it down, you know, year to year and reevaluate after each year. And I did that. And again, I ended up staying 8 more years.
Which is a benefit to the Irvine team, no doubt. With you being with the program since 2004, 2005-ish, we'll say, what are some of the most major changes that you've observed since becoming a part of the Antioch coaching staff? Is it the talent, strategy, growth, physicality of the game, or is there something else?
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about the game in general, the game has certainly evolved big time. I mean, the game has become such a big man's game. I mean, there's a ton of monsters out there on the court that obviously covered a lot of ground, especially in the middle where guys are getting pin to pin. And then, you know, your pin guys are still really athletic, but now even more so, because, I mean, offenses are super fast and you got guys that are all fast twitch with big time arms and running all over the place. And then on the right side, you still got big bombers with bombing the ball front row, back row, and from the service line. So the game just continues to evolve. It's been fun to watch the growth of the game. I mean, the athletes are still similar, but you know, there's guys that are just bigger. There's guys that, you know, that are more versatile, that do more things. And so again, I mean, you know, it's like every other sport, it evolves with the growth of the game.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you stay on top of developing the game? I mean, you have another full-time job essentially. And I mean, it's amazing the work that you've done, because one of the things that caught my ear that you've said was most assistant coaches spend 10 hours per day in the office, going over film, strategy, development, and all that. You said maybe 10 hours a week, and you're still able to powerfully impact some of the best athletes in the nation.
Yeah, I've always had a pretty good feel. And again, that just goes, I think it goes back to my roots is always being around athletics and always being interested in athletics. And then even in college, you know, studying kinesiology probably, it certainly didn't hurt. But yeah, I just have an eye or a feel, I guess, for the game, and you know, kind of have a pretty good idea of what our opponents are going to do. And that's been one of the things that I've concentrated on is stopping our opponents. And so, yeah, I guess that's the best way I could put it without, you know, sounding arrogant or what have you. And hopefully that doesn't, but I just feel like I have a decent feel for the game, and, you know, and I think there's a lot of guys that do, but that's, I guess, what's overcome the lack of time being spent watching film and breaking down film. I mean, I didn't do any of that stuff, but I just didn't put the hours against it.
Well, it's definitely instinctual, because I know from sitting courtside with you where I am with the microphone, I can hear what you're doing, and you're calling the other team's plays, and it's happening, and our guys would miss it, and you'd emphatically say something. I called that. Just listen to me.
I have a tendency to get a little bit emotional at times when we tell our guys exactly what's coming, and then, you know, they, for whatever reason, it's not so much that they don't stop it, because it's still hard to stop someone who's really good, even if you know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But when someone doesn't do what you tell them to do, that's a part that I have a little bit of a challenge with at times. But you know what? For the most part, guys have been pretty good.
So I know I didn't send this question to you beforehand, but I've got to ask, because, I mean, you've got a son who's now playing D1 ball at Stanford. And I mean, seeing his career grow, I mean, I think the only time I was taller than Kyler was when he was 9 years old. So, but he's become quite an incredible spokesperson for the program, and he's a great player. I mean, what does that mean for you as his dad to see all this blossom while doing all this stuff for UCI men's volleyball for volleyball, because you're one of the most highly respected individuals. And take it, please do. Just look at the comments and on the all the social. You're probably one of the most well-liked people that I've seen on, you know, personality-wise in volleyball. So how have you been able to do all that?
Wow. Well, that's flattering. I appreciate it, Rob. Thank you. In terms of the portion about Kyler, my son, I mean, I couldn't be any more proud of him. He was like me. I mean, he got a little bit of a late start because he was a baseball kid and then switched over to volleyball and just fell in love with it and has really blossomed as a player and more importantly, as a leader. He's just a natural leader. He's got great energy. He cares about other people and a natural ability to lead. So that's the part that's been really fun to watch is his growth in that regard. I mean, he's played on the youth national team, the junior national team, and been, you know, captained those teams to some really solid success in different world events. Mm-hmm. And then at Stanford, he stepped on the court as a true freshman and started from the start. Has had a solid career. He's had some challenges with setters being injured there, unfortunately. But
three or four deep each season due to injuries.
yeah. I mean, and that's the tough part is that it's hard to get kids in at Stanford. Obviously, they don't have tons of depth typically, and so when they've had some setters that have been out, they haven't had. In fact, last year when we played them at our place, both of their setters were hurt, and they had an outside hitter setting for them.
Yeah.
That was obviously interesting, and it wasn't like he had been a setter previously, but yeah. So, but regardless, I mean, he's at Stanford. It's obviously an amazing institution.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, despite their program going away after this year, he's had a great experience there. And I'm just hopeful that he and the rest of college volleyball happens this year and that everyone gets to play this season after last year getting cut short.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to say one of the memorable moments was when you found out that he had committed to, or you'd announced he'd committed to Stanford, and how quickly people on social media offered their Stanford Cardinal golf shirts, like former coach Don Shaw. You were just getting heckled like crazy, and I loved every bit of it.
Yeah, no, I got a lot of flack. when it was announced that he was going to Stanford and people, to your point, offering all kinds of Stanford gear up to me. And you know, to this point, I haven't worn a ton of it. I would wear like a red surf shirt or whatever going to his matches. But now, you know, he probably would be pretty upset if I didn't don something in the with the Cardinal and the S with a tree on it or whatever that emblem is. But yeah, so I'll probably bust something out this year at matches again, assuming they happen.
Right. So now this is a longer one of the questions, and I really wanted to ask you because, you know, being in the program at UC Irvine as long as I've been, I'll just say that I'm similar in age to you. I've seen a lot of volleyball, and I've seen him in the bottom of the dump rise to the top. But this is here's the question. 24 UCI men's volleyball athletes have earned All-American status. 35 have been tabbed All-Conference honorees. Over a dozen have donned the USA men's national team uniform, one with a bronze medal in the Rio Olympics. Close to two dozen have played internationally professional ball. From that same group, there are respected medical doctors, Johnny Steller, lawyers, businessmen, public servants, and all-around great contributors to our society. What does it mean to you that you've invested your best in their lives?
Well, I mean, it means the world to me. I mean, yeah, you just named some accolades and a couple actual names of players, but that's the reason, as I mentioned earlier, that I've continued to come back is that just the quality of kid and their character that has come through our program is just, it's been astonishing. I mean, I tell people all the time that when I was playing in this league, back and I played in the early 90s, you know, UCI was not good. I mean, they were at the bottom of our conference on an annual basis.
Back in the Weaver days?
They still had good players and good athletes, but they just weren't in the upper echelon, if you will. And then, you know, to come here as a coach and see just the transformation of the program to go from, you know, being closer to the bottom of the league to now competing for league championships and national championships on pretty much an annualized basis has been amazing. And it's all a testament to the kids that, that we've gotten and, or that have come through. So there's amazing kids. I mean, you just made mention of one of the kids that have gone on to play on our U.S. national team. And I think you're talking about Dave Smith.
Yes.
You mentioned someone winning a bronze, and that would be Smitty. I mean, think about his story. He here's someone who is fully deaf, 100% deaf. He could play in the Special Olympic Games, mm-hmm. and yet playing in the Olympic Games, and he's one of the best players in the world. I mean, there's stories like that all over the place within our program, and it's awesome. I mean, he actually texted me today, and I haven't gotten back to him yet. But yeah, that's the part that makes it all so worthwhile, is that, yeah, I worked a full-time job and then went to UCI afterwards and you know, made some family sacrifices as a result, but to get these texts from a good number of the players that I've coached over the years has been so gratifying and very, very humbling. It's been a really neat thing.
Well, just so you know, I actually spoke to David Smith today, and he wanted to do a video message, but he literally was going on the court for his Wednesday night game Tuesday night game in Poland, because he plays for Zaxa, who is an unbelievable 18-0 this season.
Wow!
So they are crushing it, and he's having a great season.
Oh, that's awesome!
And same thing with Johnny Steller.
He's such a neat kid too. Yeah. I mean, comes from a great family, and yeah. So, like I said, it's stories like that and kids like him that, you know, are the reason that I spent, you know, as much time as I did at Irvine, and there's just not even a single regret.
Yeah. Well, the next logical question is, what's the next chapter for Presh?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, you know, when Niff and I sat down and talked about this just a couple months ago, I just told him that it was time to, you know, dedicate more time to my two younger kids. You know, I got to spend a lot of time in Kyler's career when he was growing up playing baseball and then volleyball, and got to coach him in club and volleyball. And then now my younger son, Jetty, he just turned 14. He's in eighth grade. He has a complete fetish for the sport as well. My daughter is 9, and you know, she's already started to dabble a little bit. I don't want to start her too young, but she's getting into volleyball a little bit too and starting to get the bug because she sees her older brother playing, her older brothers. And so I want to be there for all of their stuff and help coach or at least help mentor along the way. And again, I mean, my job, my real job, if you will, takes up a lot of time. And prior to COVID, there was a ton of travel and hopefully that's going to come back at some point in time.
Right.
But so yeah, that's what's next for me, is just focusing more on family, focusing more on making sure that, that someone comes in and is in that role at UC Irvine that has the ability to put in the time that's necessary to do the recruiting, to break down video, to scout, to do everything that this role entails. And so again, it was the right time.
Yep. Well, I'm gonna move on to my next section here. And actually I solicited some questions from the Ever Great Volley Talk user board, and also some fan questions from social media, but I'm not gonna hit you with too many, just three. And they're basic ones. Okay. And I know they're gonna be tough though, because I try to answer them myself. I'm like, I don't know what that would be, but here's the first one. What is or are your top one or two memories or takeaways from your time at UCI?
Wow.
Told you.
That is a tough one. No doubt about it. I don't know that I can narrow it down to one or two. Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're fortunate enough to compete for and then win national championships, I mean, it would be hard to say that anything takes precedence over those four titles. And you remember that feeling of when the final ball dropped. You made mention of the 2013 final ball dropping there. We were at Pauley Pavilion and we were playing BYU, and they had beaten us, I think, three times, twice in the league and then once in playoffs or whatever. But So to play them that it was either that third or fourth time and beat them, you know, in the ultimate game was an amazing feeling. And the year before, SC had just beaten us pretty handily. And then we're playing them at their place.
Mm-hmm.
To beat them in their gym in the finals. And that again was a really, really talented, rock solid team. Yeah, you just can't replace that feeling. But maybe my favorite moment, and this is not really a single moment, but was what happened from that first year that I coached in 2005. And we were a pretty good team that year, but our final record was 9-20. We couldn't find ways to win. We couldn't find ways to get over the hump. And I believe that you have to learn how to win through experience and through some turmoil and adversity. And so then comes the 2006 season, and it's pretty much the same kids on the floor. We only had a couple kids graduate.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we start off and we were okay at first. And then all of a sudden we figured out that we were pretty good, or the kids figured out that we could be pretty good. And I think we went on a 21 or 22 match win streak.
It's 22-0.
Okay. There you go. Yeah. And so we were playing really well, and we went into the Final Four, and we were the number one seed, and we played again, the host, Penn State, at Penn State. And in the first match, UCLA won that semi, and then we played in the second semi against Penn State. And, you know, it was five games and went till late. And as you know, the story goes where the clock strikes 11 and the lights go out. And, you know, it was that lighting system that has to reboot back up and take some time to reheat up or whatever. So that was an interesting way to end a match, and it was 13 all at the time, and we ended up losing that match, you know, in the fifth. But that was that season, and what that transformation that happened in the program, the kids finally realizing that we did belong at the highest level. Mm-hmm. And that we compete for a national championship, that might be, you know, one of my fondest memories. And yeah. it was at the helm of or the guy at the helm was Paul Spittle, who, you know, was there when I started.
Yep.
And he was our first leader, and he's one of the people that I'm most fond of in the history of our program. Great natural leader, undersized guy, great volleyball player, but undersized, but just grinder, super hard worker, again, great leader. And those are the kind of guys that you always remember.
Well, you must have like known what my next question was going to be, because that was the next question. Who are some of your favorite players you've ever coached, and why did they resonate with you? So obviously Paul Spittle. Wow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it would start with Spittle certainly. But yeah, I mean, there's so many guys that'd be really hard to do justice to, you know, all the different kids that have come through. Cause like I said, we've had so many neat kids, and it's not just the kids that play or all Americans or that win national championships. I mean, there's all kinds of great kids that have come through, or whether they be, you know, a character, or whether they be someone like John Steller that you mentioned, who's now a doctor, and, you know, seeing things from the cerebral side. And, you know, there's lots of bright kids at Irvine. But yeah, I mean, that next wave of kids that came through that we actually won that championship with, which were David Smith and Jason Jablonski and Matt Weber and Brian Thornton, you know, those four were all seniors on that 07 team, which was our first national championship. I mean, all the kids were great kids. T-Dub was a starter on that team. JD was a starter on that team. I mean, then the next wave of kids would have been when those two, Jordan and T-Dub, were older, and then Yodes was on that team, and then Ammo. And I mean, you talk about another great story. Ammo got here from Colorado. He was this, I mean, he was tall, he was 6'8", but he was probably 150 pounds, and was not a good volleyball player yet.
You put him on the Presho protein program?
Well, I mean, he's still not, you know, super thick, but, you know, he's always going to be skinny. His folks are nice and skinny, and that probably a good thing, right? But, you know, no, what he did do was he worked his butt off, and he did way more than what was expected or what the minimum is, if you will. And he turned himself from, you know, just a mediocre player in terms of high level college volleyball into not only a great player, but, you know, Final Four MVP and a national champion, and went on and had a nice career on the national team. And
yep.
Those kind of kids that you remember and are just so special. And then, you know, there's other kids that, I mean, Woolley, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about Woolley and Lon. I mean, those two are two of the hardest working kids that have ever come through the program. And yeah, two of my favorite people. And I remain close with all those kids and hopefully always will. I call them kids. They're obviously not kids anymore, but you always look back on them as your players or your kids, if you will. So,
yep. Well, I have to show you, this is 2009 right here.
Yeah.
I have it just happened to happen right here for you.
Yeah. Well, that's the year that AMMO was MVP. And
that was the Carson Clark, the stepping up of Carson Clark era.
Yeah. So Carson was a freshman on that team, and Carson played great too. I mean, you know, it's amazing how we've always had kids step up and play their best in the biggest matches. I mean, you know, there's many stories of guys that played their absolute best matches when we got to the finals.
Yeah.
Again, I could name 20 guys where that's the case.
Yep. Well, here's the final question. It's kind of like I'd be curious on your take on it, because I know that you're into the game, but as far as the outside growth of the game is where this question is, you know, delves into. But what do you think needs to be done to grow volleyball in the United States?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's already happening. I think that there's some really good things that are happening to grow the game. And I think that just naturally, I mean, there's a lot of people that love the game, and it's such a sport that's conducive to playing for a long time that, you know, even though it's looked at as a lifestyle sport, you can continue to play volleyball for, you know, the rest of your life, whether you play on the beach or whether you play indoors. But I mean, the things that need to be done, like I said, I think are already in place. There's some different foundations out there, and you were talking to Spoo as before we started this. And, you know, he's doing some really neat things with his organization.
First Point. Yeah.
Yeah. First Point, which is growing the game. Yeah. It used to be called Motor MVB, and now it's First Point. Yep. They're raising money and growing the game in terms of adding programs all throughout the country. And you know, they're starting with D2 and D3 programs, but they're trying like crazy, I know, to add a D1 program, maybe another Pac-12 team or what have you. There's some interest there. You know, on the women's side, I mean, women's volleyball is huge. And so I don't know that, you know, that the women's side needs anything else in terms of growth. I mean, it's there on the women's right. side, which is awesome. But on the men's side of the game, yeah, just need to get more of our really solid athletes in the country to continue to have an interest in the game. And I think that happens over time as more and more parts of the country adapt the game from a collegiate perspective. You know, it's been pretty West Coast and then Midwest dominant as a sport. And, you know, if you fill in some of those gaps in between here and the Midwest, and then it filters down into the southern part of the country, and certainly the East too, because you would say the East, because Penn State's back there and they've had obviously a ton of success. But if we can get the rest of the country playing, then I think that bodes well for the future.
Yep. Well, good stuff there. Those are our Volley Talk and Viral Volley fan questions. So one final segment, and it's a special segment for your retirement, because being in the game, as long as you have been 16 only for coaching, but you've been in the game, you know, since your high school years, and your reach has gone far and wide. It's international. I'd even go to say intergalactic at this point, because so many people know of Presh and your personality, your humor, your infectious personality of wanting to have a good time, but also this brilliant side that just knows the game that's very instinctual. So I went ahead and I'm going to share my screen with you and hope it doesn't bomb. Let's see. And if it's too small, let me know. But I started pulling some of the images of the social media that was coming up. And let's see. Oh, no, is it blocking it?
Oh,
so that is
that Weicker? Did that come from Weicker?
That's right. It says, I'm going to read it for our fans who are listening. Big Dog 949, Crescio was and will always be the man. I am grateful for having his mentorship for a few years when he started coaching. And he signs at Big Dog 03, whom I tagged him. If you don't feed the big dog, he won't guard the yard.
Yeah, Big Dog. I mean, yeah. You talk about a guy that had a personality and was a phenomenal blocker. I mean, he was one of those people responsible for taking the program from, again, how I alluded to it way back in my day as I'm becoming an old man here, and helped to transform it into where we're at today. I mean, that guy dominated at the net. He was a huge guy, as you know, Robbie, and
yep.
Hands, and he could stuff the volleyball.
Yep. Oh, no doubt. Here's our next one, a little smaller. Let's see if I can make that bigger. But I said you have international influence. Kevin Tilley, 7. Presho, he finds all the nicknames of the players. Lots of laughs with Presh. So mind you, his dad is the coach of the French national team. Mom was a former Olympian for Holland or Netherlands. And he's one of the guys that you got to come across during your career.
Yeah, I'd say that he put his mark on our career. On our program. He came for 2 years and we won 2 titles. I used to call him all kinds of different names. I like to give goofy nicknames. I called him the Champs-Élysées. I called him Jean-Pierre. We had all kinds of different names for him, but Tilley was and still is a heck of a volleyball player. We were lucky to get him. He had started off, he came from France and was playing at a school up in Canada and then came down here and, like I said, played a couple of years. He actually played SPOOS last year and then NIF's first year.
Yep.
So he was one of those guys that crossed over with both coaches, but great player. And again, still a great player. And the family is just a phenomenal family. His older brother played basketball at Utah. His younger brother just finished at Gonzaga. He's now
playing with the Memphis Grizzlies. He's actually been suiting up.
Yeah. Yeah. Now he's playing in the league. Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, that's quite a family. When Kevin is the smallest guy in the family at 6'7" out of 3 brothers, that's pretty impressive.
Yep. Let's see. Let's jump to the next one here. Remember Armin Zakarian.
The Armenian.
Presho is known for the nicknames he gave his players and coaches. My first meeting with the staff as an assistant coach, I had just eaten a chicken plate with a small garlic spread. First words that came out of my mouth didn't mean anything. Presh turns to me and says, "What did you do? Eat a whole clove of garlic? Dang it, Army." And the rest of my first year as assistant coach, my nickname was Gilroy, as in the Gilroy Garlic Festival, for those of you who aren't familiar.
Yeah, no, I mean, Gilroy is the garlic capital of the world. And we were actually up in Lake Arrowhead. We would do this preseason camp up there in Lake Arrowhead at the time. And he had some garlic coming out of his skin and everywhere else. And so, yeah, I started calling him Gilroy, but Army was awesome. Army was a grinder and worked his butt off. And yeah, to his credit and rightfully so, he got a great job up at school.
Diablo Valley. Is that the one? Diablo Valley College.
Yep. Yep. And he's doing great up there. So I'm happy for Armin. He's a great guy.
Yep. All right. Let's see. Here we go. Some of us may know who this person is. Chris Geeter McGee. One of my best friends. Amazing human. Awesome coach. Legend. Congrats on a glorious run, Presh. Now, yeah. He was your era.
He's a lot. Geet City is... with him. Well, I'm sorry. What was that, Rob?
You played against and with him. And were you also on Team Fletch back in the day?
Oh, well, yeah. Geet and I have been on Team Fletch for many years. And we've been fortunate enough to win a bunch of times at the six-man, which, you know, is one of the majors, as you might know. But, yeah, no, Geet is definitely one of my best friends in the world and love him like a brother and real proud of him and his career. Obviously he's now, I mean, went from being the AVP announcer for a long time to following his true passion, which is the Lakers. And now he's the Lakers announcer and doing awesome. So, yep. But very flattering to hear that from him. He's the man.
All right. And I said you had international influence. I don't know if you
remember.
Barchi, it's actually a video message here. So let's give it a listen. She's playing for the first place team in the Turkish Women's Pro League, Vakifbank. So
of course she is. She's on it.
Yep. and she's been playing phenomenal.
Hey Presh, I just wanted to say congrats on your retirement. It was such a privilege to work with you at Irvine, and congrats again.
Short and sweet, but you know, there's a 9-hour difference, but she stepped on and did it. So I was excited that she did that. Robbie Chai, former, you know, your VIS guy, your, let's hope you can hear this.
Hey Mark, this is Rob. So 16 years, that's a long time. I'm absolutely proud to have been by your side on the bench and in the practice courts a few of those years. They were awesome. You're an awesome guy, dude. You and your preciousisms. I'm sure Brad'll see a couple preciousisms in his video. But unbelievable. Your ability to make a nickname for pretty much everyone is hilarious. And for everybody that knows that, it's funny. But let's go over a couple stories, experiences, or something, so that this video is something worthwhile. Things that come to mind. You know, going off to Stanford, you know, staying at the Creek Side. It's actually called Creek Side, Mark, but the Creek. That was some good times. Our trip to... One of the trips to UOP, when we get the minivans that have the GPS unit that that you were using. I mean, it was like this little teeny tiny thing, smaller than the phones now. It was unbelievable. So you're doing lead. I think you're in your van, Spraw, and myself are in a van. And I'm not sure if it was either Hawks's van or if it was a Niffin van. But we're following you to UOP, which, honestly, John and I are going, it's right over here, like 3 blocks away. What's Mark doing? So you're following your GPS unit, and you stop in the middle of the street with traffic. You get out of your car, and you go like this. We're here. Honestly, that was hilarious. I wish I had that on video. That was good. Our trips to Hawaii, you know, that was probably one of the better experiences. Of course, we're going to Hawaii, you know, where you played, and you always let us know that you are the all-time leader in kills at UH, 1,582 kills, and that is your house. And don't mind the person named Costas that came after and destroyed it. That did not happen. It's yours. Oh, man. That's good times, too. But we had some good matches. You know, on the topic of being in Hawaii, you know, our post-matches, you know, we'd go to Duke's, talk about it, and enjoy watching our match on the TV at Duke's. Great experiences. You know, there's the volleyball part, and there's also, you know, becoming a good friend with you. And that's probably the most cherishable thing, is that I get to call you my friend. And that means a lot. So, I guess, you know, I guess this is it. I guess Jenny's going to have you at home a lot more. So when she's tired of you, I'm pretty sure you could probably give us a call. Might find a spot for you. Anyways. So, I don't know. I guess that's it, man. So proud to be your buddy. And I don't have them all, but I did find this one. So, I don't, you know, we all have memories. I think the other two, I think 06 and, 07 and 09 are at home at my mom's house. So, I pretty much gave those to my mom. But this was still laying around, so I figure. This one's for you, man. Take care, Mark. Love you.
Bobby is one of the best people in volleyball. That guy, I mean, obviously I have some roots in Hawaii, and he reminds me so much of a bunch of different people that I was around when I was living in Hawaii. He's just nothing but happy and all smiles and great vibes and just, you know, the spirit of aloha.
Yep. Well, I'm going to go to the next video that we won't be able to hear, but.
Mark, Brad here, wishing you a congratulations, happy retirement. Was contacted by Rob Asparo to say a few words about you. Not sure if this is going to you or to the public, so I'll blend the two and I will be somewhat appropriate in some way, shape, or form. First off, I miss you. Had mixed emotions about all this. I want you to stay in this game forever. For those of you out there, if this is going to be a public broadcast and they do not know Mark Presho, he is quite the character, one of the characters in our game, and someone that we're sorely going to miss. Mark, I can go 100 ways with this, and I want you to know I really want to go 100 different ways with this. I will say this, for anyone out there that doesn't know, Mark is one of the most loyal individuals I've ever met. He's been sincere. It is what it is to him. He's a great role model for the kids. He leads by example, and he's never wavered. He's been one of the most consistent individuals around. He takes good care of himself, which is something that we all need to do a better job of. And he's raised an unbelievably great family and has great people around him. As you will probably see, a bunch of us will be sharing stories or saying we miss you or a whole bunch of different things that will occur because of the impact that you, Mark, have made on all of us. I will say one thing to everybody. Mark has one quirk that needs to be revealed. It's time. Mark has his own language, a language that none of us really truly understand, but we find ourselves using. I use it on a daily basis, and my kids today think that I'm very weird, Mark. So I want to thank you for causing me this pain subconsciously. Things like, Mark will say something like, hey, Brad, just want you to know I'm a lot better than you, the kid. And there's this random sniff afterwards, like a punctuation mark. Yes, Mark, I do that too now. Thank you, I think. Also, Presh will use words like instead of fish, which is pronounced fish, he will say fash, fresh, fash. And I think it's because it rhymes with presh, but I'm not quite sure about that. Instead of the word throw, you use tro. You got tro over there, you got tro over there, and you got tro over there, you know what I mean? Don't know what that is, but I use that all the time. And finally, you use bong. So you got a tro the ball back there, and the guy needs to bong the D. But we all use these, we say it all the time, and we all know where it comes from. It comes from you. And so I want you to know that we will continue this on. I will try to teach the coaches beneath me or under me to learn these habits because I think they're hilarious. Mark, on a serious note, you've been there for me through thick and thin. You've been a great older brother, shall we say, to me. You were there for me when some of my darkest moments when I was there at Irvine, and you've always believed in me. And I love you to death. I'm bummed that you're retiring, but hopefully that means I get to see a little bit more of you. You're always welcome in my gym and around my family and household. And I hope you have a great next chapter because, man, you absolutely deserve it on all levels. I love you. I'll talk to you soon.
Probably the best looking guy in women's volleyball.
And then finally, longtime friend, teammate, and now, I guess, former opponent at UCLA, John Hawks.
Hi, everybody. John Hawks with UCLA. And I want to thank Rob for sharing Mark's story today with the rest of the volleyball world. What a tremendous 16-year career you've had, Mark, at UC Irvine. And I was happy to be a part of it right at the beginning. When I was hired by John Sprott in 2003, he and I were talking about who'd be a great volunteer. And when you think about the word great, there's only a few athletes or volleyball players that come to mind, and certainly you were one of them. And it turned out being one of the greater decisions John made in bringing you on board. And truthfully, it was a highlight for me because I got a chance to work with my best friends. And, you know, you and I date back to probably 1977, 76, somewhere in that range, where we're going on about 43, 44 years of friendship at this point. And to get an opportunity to work with you and see the impact you made and you are still making on student athletes to this day was a joy for me. You have an incredible eye for talent. You have an incredible work ethic. You have a championship mindset. And all those things just bled into the program. So I learned from you. I still learn from you. And I love you, and I'm happy that you've chosen to move forward and spend that time watching Kyler in his last year of college, watching Jetty grow up, and watching Alexandra grow up as well. So you're a great husband, you're a great father, you're a great role model, and you're a great friend. So thanks, and I'm super happy to be here. Now, Rob asked to also share some funny moments. Now, if you know Mark and Maya's relationship, you will probably know that Mark likes to push my buttons more than anything. And I think he stays up at night thinking about things that he can say to get under my skin. What he probably doesn't remember or know at this point is that he's directly responsible for my haircut. I had a little bit longer hair back in those days, and Mark would always tell me every day he'd come in the gym, he'd say, "Hey Johnny, the longer your hair gets, the thinner it looks. I want you to shave it." So that's one story. You can see how I point. This is Mark's way of directing people around the court. You go hit the D. You go hit the big. You go hit the go. That's another thing that comes to mind of only things that I can repeat. I mean, I can't repeat most of what is really funny. He likes to, and this is what probably nobody knows, maybe some of his really only truly best friends, that Mark is notorious for laughing at his own jokes. It'll sound like this. He'll say something and then he'll go, you'll hear this, hee, 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 hee. That's Mark's way of laughing at his own joke. And little does he know that I've known this for a long time. So God bless him, love him, and super happy to be a part of this. And thanks, Rob, for doing this and getting Mark's story out there again.
So I'll be sure to send that your way, but he had some good stuff to say, and I know you'll appreciate it. I know I'll have to send you the video since I know you're not very active on social, but I mean, some good stuff.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. If you could send me a link to him, because yeah, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, I'm not much of a social media guy.
Well, I do have to point out something else though. It's the final one, and it's from Kyler. He saw the post online, said, "For my dad, coaching was actually a second job. He needed a separate 9-to-5 to put food on the table for us hungry kids, and never once complained about rushing from his office out in Azusa all the way to Irvine for practice, back home to San Clemente when the day was done. Coaching was simply his passion, and he did whatever was necessary to stick around and instruct or mentor his players through the overwhelmingly transformational period that is college and NCAA athletics. The fulfillment for him came in watching 18-year-old kids enter the program with a naivete of youth and exit as accountable, capable, hardworking men." And I got to go to the next one. "He never asked for credit." I can make this larger for you. "He never asked for credit and would often pawn off the spotlight on others just to maintain humility. But I can say this, the celebration and recognition of his career that he's received in these past couple of days since officially announcing his retirement means the world to him. Much love to our amazing volleyball community from the Presho fam. So that's from Kyler.
Yeah, that's really cool, Rob. Thank you for sharing that. And he's spot on in what he says there at the end. It does mean the world. The outpouring of former players and different people in the volleyball world has been super flattering and humbling beyond belief. I didn't think that anyone would notice or care for that matter. So it's been really cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've raised a phenomenal young man, an athlete, and you've done so with even some of the kids that you've taken on as your own with all the 18-year-olds that have come into the UC Irvine program. But, you know, one of the quotes that I witnessed you on the bus, you say, couldn't ring more true, though. And I'll say it sounds funny. And like, if you don't take it in the right context, you may take it the wrong way. But essentially what you said is to this one person, UC Irvine hired me in 2005. We're playing for a national championship in 2006. You do the math.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, I may have been a little bit cocky back in my youth. Hopefully I've outgrown that a little bit. But I think I remember, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think I remember Thornton telling me that I said that to him, but I don't know.
I just remember laughing so hard in my face in the back of the bus seat.
Yeah, it's definitely something I would have said as a young knucklehead myself, no doubt about it.
Well, hey, Mark, I don't want to take any more of your time this evening because you've taken a long time. And I mean, I definitely wanted to recognize your efforts at UC Irvine because even though, you know, I got to see you play in high school and your career developed at Hawaii, you'd come in and crush Irvine those early years. You guys probably be at the beach within 30 minutes in Newport. I heard the stories. But
not quite that fast. Like I said, I mean, they weren't bad. They just weren't at the top of the league.
Yeah. But also just seeing what you've done and how you've built the relationships you did for the Irvine program. And you're one of the most highly respected and most admired individuals I see in the volleyball world. Because I'll run into you as a volunteer assistant at USA Volleyball Nations League matches or even a high performance practices or even club tournaments, which I saw you coaching when I'm like, what are you doing on that sideline? But you're so well-liked and the game loses such a powerful and well-loved personality in yourself. And I can't thank you enough for all you've done, not only for UC Irvine volleyball, but just in volleyball. I mean, it's been incredible knowing that you've influenced all these people's lives that end up doing incredible things, not only for the game, but in life. So,
I appreciate it, Rob. Years. Thank you. Means the world to me and I appreciate it very much. You're the man.
I look forward to seeing the family bonding and seeing your kids crushing it and Coach Presho at club practice or that dad that you want to get rid of. That's on the sidelines.
I'll be at all those. I'll be at matches. I'll be at college matches. Obviously, I'll be at Irvine matches. I'll stay involved a little bit on the club side. I'll help out with 949, which is a local club here close to where I live in San Clemente. And I'll always stay around the game. I have too much passion for it to ever leave it.
Oh, excellent. Well, thank you again for taking time on the Varo Volley podcast after 16 illustrious years at UC Irvine and just an overall great career. Mark Presho, who retires from UC Irvine men's volleyball, but we know that he'll still be in the game because he's got kids that are going to be keeping him in it.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate it, bud.